Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan Schally. Today, I am joined by a guest co-host, Adam Monson, the author of the recently released Steadfast Self-Hosting book, which I featured on my newsletter and website many times over the last several months, and also the co-founder of Siegel. Adam, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Ethan. I'm really honored to be here. I've been looking for good ways to spread the word about my book, and you know I've been a longtime fan of your work. You're a genuine hero to self-hosters. I'm not embarrassed to say it. Your stuff is useful. It's well-researched. And people like you make the self-hosted world feel welcoming and fun. So thank you.
Oh, thanks for the kind words. And I do have to say that speaking with you in the preparation for this episode is actually the first time I've ever heard Siegel pronounced out loud. Internally, I've always just called it CGL. And I realize how silly that is now that I've heard you say it several times.
Oh, nice.
So I've learned something new already.
Oh, it's a favorite bird around here for sure.
Yeah, I love it. So we have a lot to get through today, so we're going to jump into it. The first thing I have in this week's newsletter is the results of my recent self-host user survey. So annually, starting last year, I started a tradition where I conduct a survey of 30 to 40 questions of random self-hosting topics. This past week, I released the results of that survey. I did a live stream with DB Tech on YouTube. Really cool discussion I had with him. We had 3,900 responses, I think it was, almost double what we had last year. I was super happy with the turnout. And looking through the show notes, Adam, I see you had a couple things that had stuck out to you. Anything in particular you think worth bringing up?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the most offset stats were the gender gap between men, women, non-binary, other.
Right.
And I was really inspired by what Siegel, the same conference, did. They, you know, made a point to welcome underrepresented people directly, and they had goals and metrics around that, I recall. And they were really good about maintaining and enforcing a really meaningful code of conduct. So it just made people feel safe, you know, psychologically safe. Safe in person, obviously, but psychological safety. So that was a cool thing. They did well.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me. So obviously, I do want my content to be more inclusive. I am very cognizant of privacy conscious users in the community. And so from an analytics perspective, I really don't collect a whole lot of information about my users. And so it's hard to gauge sometimes what content certain demographics are engaging with and where I should focus more time and less time. So I guess I'll say, as a result of the survey, if anyone is reading these results or listening to this episode and has some ideas or thoughts about how I can work from my own perspective, my own content, I'm completely open to that.
Nice. Yeah, you can have my daughter on. She's
that's a great guest co-host for next week, maybe.
Nice.
That sounds great. Anything else stick out to you?
Yeah. So I use Traffic, but just a couple weeks ago, I checked out Caddy, and I think you're using that a bit, right?
Yes, I absolutely am.
Yeah, I was like an instant fan. It was cool to see it rising in the ranks a little bit. I mean, compared to Traffic, I think it was like half of Traffic's bar last year, and this year it's like two-thirds of Traffic's popularity, I guess. And I get that the Nginx, the two Nginx ones, if you put those together, those would be way to the right.
Absolutely.
Nice. Well, it's good to see Traffic jumping up there. I think it's a great fit for self-hosters, small scale. You just jump right in, very few lines.
And I'm sorry, Adam, what are you using?
I'm using Traffic. Still.
Traffic.
Yeah, but with trying Caddy, I might switch. We'll see.
Yeah, Caddy's great. It's super simple. I've dabbled with Traffic in the past before, but I know it's a little more complex. But once you get it up and running, it's pretty nice. Yeah. Nginx, I struggle with. I know Nginx Proxy Manager makes things really easy, and that's probably why that's at the top. But Nginx config files drive me bananas trying to troubleshoot them when I'm struggling with certain services. So
yeah,
I think it's just the standard why it's up there. Otherwise, it kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
Not super surprising results otherwise.
Makes sense. Yeah, I'm an old school Apache user, so I'm used to just long lines of crazy web server configs, and I haven't used Nginx much, but Traffic is it's great for Docker because it finds those labels and just starts setting up your services as you start containers. But I also found limits of the labels, and that's why I wrote that article you had in your newsletter last year about, or last week, about isolating containers. Traffic couldn't do it, but Caddy did it very easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Caddy. Love me some Caddy.
Nice.
So moving on from the survey results, I'll link to those in the description, the episode description below, if anyone wants to check those out. There are actually, oddly enough, the timing is very coincidental. A couple other folks reached out to me this week to ask if I could pitch some surveys that they're running. So I've included some in the introductory section of the newsletter if anyone wants to check them out. The Mealy team dropped a new major version, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we get to the software updates. But they're looking for some feedback to gauge how people are using the platform, which I think is very reasonable. There was a survey I found on Reddit. Someone's developing a new uptime monitoring application and is just looking for feedback on what users are looking for when it comes to features of something like that. And then a reader actually reached out to me via email, mentioned they're studying computer science, developing a toolkit, and is looking for some feedback. So across the three surveys here, please, if you have time, it's a great way to give back. I make a note here for people who spend a lot of time developing software that many of us use for free and take for granted. I think it's a really good way to give back. So please consider taking those.
Yeah, Mealy was so impressive. I mean, yeah, I can't wait to talk about that one more.
Yeah, Mealy's great. So jumping to the news, Adam, are you a Sync Thing user?
I was for years, and then I switched to Nextcloud.
Okay. Yeah. So Sync Thing was in the news this week. They discontinued their Android application, yeah, which made the news. But I will say, I am a Sync Thing user, and I'm also an Android user, and I've never used the official Android client. There's a fantastic Sync Thing fork out there for Android that I can also link in the description. Excuse me, sorry. That provides all the functionality I would need from an Android client, and I've always used that. So I saw that this week, and I was like, I don't know if I should care about that, but I'm wondering if it's going to have downstream implications to this this fork that I'm also using. So,
yeah. Personally, I was like, Sync Thing was like great for what it did, but I found it pretty hard to use, and definitely hard to get my other family members and friends on it.
Yeah, I guess it reminds me a little of Traffic, maybe a little hard to configure and set up, but once you're there, it's very powerful.
Yeah.
I use it for a lot of things.
Nice.
The other thing in the news that caught my eye, there are a couple articles here. We're not going to talk through all of them today. I did not realize that Plex launched its first exclusive show, exclusive TV show. So they've been expanding their offerings, kind of shifting a little more away from the self-hosted media game. And now they are funding shows that are exclusive on Plex. I have not watched the show, but and this article is a few weeks old. I think the show premiered earlier in October, but I think it's getting okay reviews. So that's kind of promising. I think someone had mentioned it's very similar to Tim Robinson, if you know who Tim Robinson is, and his brand of humor, which I love. So I will probably check it out at some point. So with that being said, let's jump into the software updates. I know we've referenced Mealy already. Should we start with Mealy?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So have you used Mealy before?
Today, just today. So I saw it prepping my show notes, and I was like, I'll just give it a shot. And it started up. So I've got a little bit of a cooking bug. You know, it's been my job for a while here at the house. And so I'm using Markdown files and Nextcloud cookbook or Nextcloud recipes. I forget what the app is called. And Mealy felt faster, really looked nice. I think if the back end uses something like Nextcloud cookbook uses, it's a JSON recipe, JSON schema.org, JSON recipe type. And it just means like it's plain text, it's JSON, it's really easy to transport. If it uses the same thing, I think it'd be a no-brainer for me. But I understand that both of them, you can just import a recipe by URL, and that works pretty predictably, pretty well, because all the recipe sites pretty much use that schema.org recipe type. And so it's just right there in the markup. You don't see it on a web page, obviously, but when it pulls it down, it usually gets the nutrition information without any issues and everything else, right? Ingredients, directions, obviously, but that would be the clincher for me. So, but I tried it today. It looked pretty sweet. Started up right away.
Yeah, I think Mealy is one of those gateway applications for new self-hosters because it's fairly easy to spin up. I see a lot of people asking questions, and I think it just like scratches an itch for a lot of self-hosters who are looking for that organization in their life that they might not otherwise have. It's one that's beneficial and easy to share with like family and friends and stuff. The developer of Mealy, I actually had the opportunity to interview him on my podcast earlier this year, Hayden Kotelman. He's really cool, really down to earth. Really loved my conversation with him. He's a great guy. And I know the team behind Mealy, they all really care about that. So it was cool to see them drop their version 2 release. And it's interesting. You will never, you'll never experience a pre V2 Mealy. That's crazy to me, but interesting. A couple other things popped up, software updates this week. So I feel like the self-hosted world talks about the image software Image a lot. It's in the news for a bunch of different reasons. This week, I've noticed some other popular self-hosted photo and video software getting significant updates. The first one would be Chevaretto. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, by the way. Released a fairly significant update. And then PiWeGo. And again, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I know it was at least initially built for Raspberry Pi. So that's why I'm saying PiWeGo. But I think otherwise I would probably say PiWeGo. Both, I've tried them both. I went through the whole trying to replace Google Photos thing several years ago. I've tried everything and all of them are great. They all have kind of their own strengths. And so you can see both of these hitting different milestones. And I just love that there are still alternatives and options. I know there are things about Image and Photo Prism that rub people the wrong way sometimes. And so if people are looking for more applications, they're out there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do the same. You know, I got all my photos. That was step one. And I keep trying them in different apps. So I'm going through the same motions. Nextcloud Memories is pretty nice, but it doesn't do everything I want still.
I'm familiar with Nextcloud Memories. It is great. Yeah. Any other updates stick out to you, Adam, this week?
No, but I did forget to mention with Mealy that it printed recipes perfectly. So that's something I've been struggling with Nextcloud Cookbooks. But otherwise, there is one more, Sterling. Because that's on the list, right? Yeah, because
yeah, Sterling PDF.
I fired that one up today too. And I have an unfair bias against Java apps because I did enterprise Java dev and it can, you know, the beans and the buses and it just goes on and on. But this was, there's not Java isn't just bad. It's just, you know, it ends up in the enterprise. It gets kind of crazy. This was fast, clean, powerful. I was like looking at all these buttons and it looked really welcoming. Like kind of like how an IDE gives you ideas about what to do with things. This, of course I could do that with a PDF or I could go back and forth PDF, HTML. It was pretty impressive. So, and I thought it was pretty well organized. You can collapse them into categories and you can even search for a certain function. So I could see that why that's a pretty popular one.
Yeah. Sterling PDF, if I recall correctly, is fairly young, at least relative to other self-hosted applications. And it's crazy. It almost has its own cult following already. I monitor a lot of communities for the newsletter, for news and updates and whatnot. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone speak poorly of Sterling PDF. It is always just people singing its praises. So I'm not surprised to hear your feedback after you've given it a shot.
Yeah. I mean, usually my lens is, you know, can I get my, would my kids be interested in using it or my partner or my dad or whatever? And I could see them all using it without any problems. It looked like they'd be interested too.
Yeah. So before we shift to new software, I just have one other call out quickly there. If anyone's using What's Up Docker, it's a Docker container update notification application. If you just have struggle staying on top of knowing when your containers need updates, they had a couple updates that I think are worth mentioning. Their GitHub project and the container locations changed. So I don't have on here what it was previously, but I do have the new location. So if you're deploying What's Up Docker you at some point you should probably update where you're pointing to pull its image from to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and latest moving forward on a regular basis. And the other thing I was kind of excited to see is I have an icon collection for dashboards and whatnot, and WhatsApp Docker also picked up support for that. So that was really cool to see and unexpected, and made me a little giddy when I saw it. So
when they changed, so they changed where their image is hosted.
Yeah. I don't think they changed where it's hosted. I just think I think it was hosted on like a personal GitHub repo. And so now they've changed it to that's more like branded towards the application.
Well, I kind of toyed with, I'm asking because I kind of toyed with hosting my own images, but I don't even know if it's necessary. Like I try and keep track of updates and where things are, but I know some people will go off the charts and have all their own images and even build them themselves and stuff. Do you bother with any of that?
I dabble. So with Caddy, you can run all sorts of modules and extensions to extend its functionality. And so I deploy Caddy on a couple different servers, and I'm always toying with the idea of, hey, maybe rather than building it three or four separate times every time there's an update, maybe I should just have one server build the image for me and then host it on my own little container registry.
Oh yeah.
But ultimately, I think it's just too much effort and maintenance for me to pursue.
Cool.
Okay. So jumping into new software. So this is software that I found across the internet, Reddit, Mastodon, Hacker News. A lot of very interesting ones here. A couple that stood out to me, Blog2Pod. It's a way to convert written content into podcasts and generate feeds based off of that. I consume a lot of content from the web on a very regular basis. And so this is intriguing to me. I have not deployed it yet, but it's on my plans for the weekend for sure. And then
it's going to speak them? Like it's going to talk what it grabs?
I believe so. Turn written web content
that's
into
interesting. It's going to use an AI voice, text-to-speech.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
Yeah, I think so. And the other one that stood out to me was this Nortix Mail. And this one I actually think popped up in the last 24 hours. It's just a disposable email server. I love keeping my email organized and sorted. And I'm always looking for easy ways to use my own domains to do something like that. And so this one, there are a bunch out there already. I think there are a lot of great options. I think Open Trash Mail is the last one I've tried. But Nortix Mail seems like it's very straightforward to deploy. Which is what I want. I don't want the complexity of self-hosting email and fighting spam and all the complexities that come along with that. So that's also on my list of things to try this week. Anything stick out to you, Adam?
Yeah. The Pi-hole one was interesting because I would recommend against it, honestly, because it's like app specific backup solutions seems like a losing battle. Like you're going to end up having to deal with backups for each thing you install. I maybe just like, I didn't look up into it deeply, but I'd rather just like make sure the backing file system of all my services is like what I use is ZFS, take a snapshot, back that up with RESTIC to a remote. And it's so straightforward. And so every time I add a service, I don't really think about it. So you'll hear that something similar from some of the guys that talk about this a lot. So
got it. That sounds fair.
But the other one was Reddit Markdown. I'm a huge fan of plain text. I just kind of hoard a lot of plain text stuff I've written and stuff I just grab, you know, or grab snippets. And now I'm like throwing AI at it and asking it questions and stuff, which is interesting. But I just noticed that Reddit Markdown one looked kind of interesting because it leveraged some Python libraries that are pretty good. Reddit to text, Praw. But it goes through the Reddit API, so I guess you'll have to have a login and stuff. It's not just a screen scraper.
Yep, that makes sense. I think this is the second time you've mentioned plain text files now today. So yeah, I'm definitely starting to notice a pattern.
Yeah.
Okay, jump down to the breaking changes. We actually have a fair amount. I'm going to move pretty quickly through them, but there are five that I've cataloged, at least major updates with breaking changes. Mealy, we've talked about three times now. some breaking changes. If you're leveraging the API, if not, it sounds like there's not as much to worry about, but be sure to look into that. Medusa is a commerce platform, so they had a very large update. They also released V2. Interestingly enough, I tried to find the breaking changes, and at the point in time where I added it to the newsletter, I couldn't actually find anything. And all I found was similar to what I've included here, is that in the coming weeks, they'll be publishing an upgrade guide for people who want to upgrade that'll list the breaking changes. So the updates out there, don't update, I guess, for a few weeks until they publish a guide. Just interesting to me, the timing of that. Yeah. Speaking of Nginx earlier with the survey, Nginx Proxy Manager Plus is a fork of Nginx Proxy Manager. I know Nginx Proxy Manager, which is really weird to say three times in such a short period of time, is not updated as frequently as I think some users would like. So forks have emerged. And so in this particular fork, there were some breaking changes. So if you're using that, please be sure to follow the upgrade notes as you do that. Peanut is a network dashboard. They changed the way they're structuring their configuration, moving away from environment variables after the first run to either manage them via UI or a settings file. And then there was actually an application that popped up on my radar today, Suggest R, it fits into the R stack of apps, also updated some environment variable names. So check that out.
Nice. Another pirate app.
Yeah, I don't think it's really related to pirating. I think it's more about just ingesting your media and making suggestions based on what it sees.
Oh, that sounds cool.
I guess just it fits in with that suite of media apps. And so like many other applications, now ends in ARR.
I like the trend. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad. Adam, did you have a chance to look through the directory apps that I added this week?
Yeah, I did. Scriber, not R, Scriber.
Yes.
Stuck out
not
to me.
Quite R.
just because it's another awesome Whisper app. There's a ton of them. When Whisper first came out, I have a bunch of audio that I've recorded from wherever, lots of things. And I started using Whisper immediately. I was just blown away. It's state of the art speech to text. And I'm not using, I did look at this one a while back, I think. Now I'm using local AI, but just if you're listening to this and you haven't checked out Whisper and you have audio, definitely give it a shot. I mean, multi-language, best audio transcription. So, but local AI is another great one in that space.
When people use AI for transcription, is it pretty good at discerning between different speakers as it's transcribing?
Yeah, there is a thing, it's called speaker diarization. And I had played with a Python library for that for a podcast I did on Sustain. And it can, now you'll see commercial ones will just pick them out and put links to when somebody else is talking and all that. But you can do it with open source too, diarization.
Okay, that's cool. I learned something new. jumping down to the community content section of the newsletter, one of my favorite people has popped up. I have in the first article here, Dan Brown, who's well known for being the developer of Bookstack. If anyone uses that for documentation or as a wiki. So this is almost news related as well. Bitwarden was in the news this past week because of some code that they introduced into one of their clients that caused some concerns regarding whether or not they were transitioning away from open source to non-open source and what things look like. And I think it ended up being not what people initially thought was happening. But as a result, Dan wrote a really great article on his blog, and he's got a bunch. So if you haven't read them before, I would strongly encourage you to come check them out, where he talks a little bit about some other platforms that kind of preach themselves or pitch themselves as open source, but they're not quite as open source as they might lead you to believe. And so he's a really strong proponent of holding software and developers accountable for those claims, because we certainly don't ever want to compromise the integrity of the open source licensed model.
Yeah, I'm glad he called this out. I had issues with Bitwarden and it doesn't come up often, but it's kind of important when it's not important at all, and then it's really important one day.
Yeah, yeah. That's similar to my relationship with it as well.
Yeah.
So I see you have in your notes some notes about WordPress. I've talked about it a lot the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to let you speak to WordPress because I think everyone is probably tired of hearing me speak to it.
Well, I'll keep it short. I mean, just that it's been in the news a lot lately. And I know that drama can be exciting, like maybe a car wreck is exciting, but it makes me kind of sad to see. Like, I don't think it's healthy. You know, it's just something to do with companies. Like, I don't think it has to do much with the WordPress community.
Right.
At least I hope they can keep separate from that junk. But it makes me think, like, it's a great opportunity. You know, check out Ghost, try a static site generator. One thing I would say about static site generators, and I love Pelican, but they're complicated. I've tried a few of them, and I'm just not quick at it, but they seemed pretty complex. So you got to know your fundamentals really well. HTML by hand, CSS and JavaScript by hand would help to get up to speed quickly. And then you also got to know a bit about the language. So with Pelican, it helps to know Python, at least some amount of it, because it gets tricky.
Sure.
But Ghost looked pretty awesome too. And I know you're a fan of Ghost, right, Ethan?
Yeah, Ghost is actually what I use to host self-host.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really clean.
It really is. And I've used static site generators in the past. I've used Jekyll and Hugo. And they are complex. Especially I love containerizing things, and I feel like they don't play well with Docker, or you lose something when you try to containerize them. And so it's just not quite as simple as something like Ghost that provides you that editor, the WYSIWYG editor, where you're just typing, you save, it automatically reflects. There's just something special about that that you don't quite get with static site generators, or at least in my experience, I haven't ever gotten to that point.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Some of them have a watch mode where it'll react to changes on the fly, and you can sometimes get it to trigger a reload on the page too, but it's not, you know, it's not an instant it's not editing the DOM of the web page or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of reloading.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to call out in the community content section here, there is a really cool launcher called Dispatch. It's the last article here that the developer announced, I don't know, maybe a few months ago now, but it hit its first stable release this week. And I don't think it's actually open source. So, but the newsletter is self-hosted, not open source. So I don't mind talking about this. It's a really great Android TV launcher if you're using platforms like Plex. And I think it can bring in some other streaming platforms as well. And I bring it up because I know when it was announced earlier this year, people loved it. The initial reactions were great. There were a bunch of feature requests. It sounds like the developer is very responsive with their stable release here. And I think they've even reset the trials for anyone who had already used the free trial. It is a paid client. But I've struggled in the past. I use Android TV. I usually jump from launcher to launcher about every year or so. So I'll probably give this a shot at some point.
Nice. Will that work with, do you know if that'll work with like a Jellyfin or something?
That's a good question. I don't think it will, at least not yet. I think Plex is where the focus was, and this is on Medium, so I'm getting the pop-up here.
Yeah, I think I saw the Plex icon up there.
Yeah, so I think Plex is the focus for now, but maybe they're open to more than just Plex at some point in the future.
Yeah, I've been loving that Roku works so well with Jellyfin, but I just like cross my fingers that it stays that way.
I didn't realize that. I'm not a Roku user, so yeah, it's good to know.
It's a pretty good app.
My content spotlight this week was on Multi-Scrobbler. This will be big for anyone who's self-hosting their own music streaming platforms, which there are many. Many people use Plex and Jellyfin. Subsonic compatible servers exist. Navadrome is really popular. And so Multi-Scrobbler is not new, but is something I deploy myself, actually. It's just a really good way to track the history of what you've listened and provide statistics and even scrabble them to other hosted services if you'd like when you're listening to music across different platforms. It's important for me because my Spotify account is consumed by my four-year-old. And so it's very hard to go back and listen to the listening statistics or look at the listening statistics and my year-end rap because it's always skewed by things like Bluey and Doc McStuffin. So this is a really nice way to have a little more control about what I'm scrobbling and what I'm collecting. So I have a better handle on, hey, after this time period, I'm actually going to look and see what I listen to and not my daughter.
So you can separate it out.
Yeah, or it's like, hey, I just want you to track these platforms that I know I'm not, that I don't have kids use it. Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to scrob a lot. I used to use those things. They're kind of fun. Now I maybe like, yeah, like I like to see the year end thing, but it's just coming from my Jellyfin mostly. So
yeah. Yeah. And there are actually a lot of cool self-hosted applications that provide the wrapped, I think the wrapped experience for both Plex and Jellyfin. I know there are at least one of each in the directory that I maintain. Yeah. Do you deploy any of those?
Not right now. No.
Okay. Yeah. I know there are other ways to get at the statistics and information, but those seem like a cool way of getting something. The novelty of Spotify wrapped and just how it like pops up and the screens work is just really cool. It's I would be more inclined to view it if I'm not like scrolling through charts and tables on the back end of Jellyfin or something. So
yeah, totally. I have wondered that, you know, I went on a trip a week ago and I just had to remember what song it was and the data are in there. So you got to dig a little bit, but Jellyfin, if you tell it to, it can keep stuff for quite a while. So I do dig sometimes.
Great. Nice. So in the video section, and this will be the last section we cover before we break here, a couple great videos. And speaking of representation, I know we talked about gender earlier in the channel. If anyone has any recommendations for other content creators, I know I have like my very specific list of maybe 15 to 20 YouTubers I monitor. Just this week, I tried to go through and add a ton more, get a more diverse viewpoint and crowd within the videos I'm monitoring, but completely open if there are any major or minor self-hosting focused channels that I'm missing.
Nice.
Any of these videos stick out to you, Adam?
Yeah, I watched David's video on, I want to say searching because it's easier to say, but I think it might be Serkanji. Anyway, same kind of problem we mentioned a few times today about pronouncing these awesome names. Anyway, David's video is great. I think really privacy conscious folks should be a little careful even with searching. Like maybe they want to host it remote if they're worried about their local IP. But otherwise, I thought, I was like, I kind of looked at their privacy pitch and I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Yeah, it's kind of acting like a proxy that cleans your hits and then you pick what it cleans your search requests and your cookies along the way, and you can pick what it does store and which search engines you hit. It's like, I mean, I think practically that might just be a good thing just to get to hit a bunch of engines at once. But I'm not sure about the privacy, but it looked okay. It looked good.
Yeah, I think these are big in the self-hosting crowd because so many people are privacy conscious. I know Hoogle is another one, if you've heard of that. Mm-hmm. I remember a few years ago trying to deploy one of them. I can't remember which one it was. And someone had mentioned it's not really catered to single user instances because essentially, you know, using it as a proxy to Google can still see where the traffic is originating from, or it can tell that all of this traffic is coming from a single source. Mm-hmm. And so if you have multiple people using it, then Google can't really differentiate between who's using it. But if you're just a single person using that, then it's a little easier for Google to still build a profile, even if there is a little more privacy than if you were just firing up on Google. And of course, they're not tracking you from site to site either.
That's true. And there's so many interesting alternatives today. Like on my locally running AI service, I just talked to that chatbot. I think it's a Mistral model, and it can handle a lot of the easy small searches for me. I mean, what is this? What's the Python library for this or that? And they've been around long enough that they're in the models. Mm-hmm. So I'll usually try search requests against the AI first, then I'll try DuckDuckGo. And if I get bored of that someday, I think I'll try searching because that does look pretty cool too.
Do they differ often that you've noticed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot. I mean, it's totally different. Talking to an AI and trying to treat it like search is way different, right? Like, I can only ask it questions about Python because I know enough Python to know when it's BSing. You know, mm-hmm. it comes up with a result. I'm like, no, I know mm-hmm. that API. That's not right. So unless I can pick it out, I don't usually search for it. But like Spanish, like I translate between Spanish and English just effortlessly. It's pretty incredible what you can do, and it's all offline, local.
Yeah. I'm not quite at using AI as a search engine yet. Mostly, I don't know how it would work if I tried, because my search terms are usually so fractured, and I'm definitely one of those people. I speak to AI or I type to it in complete sentences. I don't think I need to, but I speak to it like it's a person. So I'm trying to think if what I would normally Google, the just like very specific terms, how well that would translate into getting information from AI, but people use it, so it must not be a concern.
Yeah, they accept quite a bit of garbage, and then just it's amazing when it seems to understand, even if it's really choppy and you're being really snippy with it. It doesn't seem to matter much.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's good to know. So cool. Well, I think with that being said, we're going to wrap it up. There are a few other sections. If you're interested, I'll include a link to the newsletter itself in the description below. But otherwise, Adam, thanks a bunch for joining me. This has been great. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Can you talk a little bit maybe about where people might be able to find you if they want to connect with you or digest some of your own content?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Grab the hook, because I can talk about myself all day. But thank you, Ethan, for having me. It's an honor. And I just got a new job, a place I worked at a long time ago. But MIFOS, MIFOS.org, is a pretty awesome group. They do open source software for microloans. And I'm just really lucky to be working with them again, producing open source software. And Siegel is coming up. So this conference we mentioned a couple times, SEAGL.org. It's Friday, November 8th and Saturday, November 9th in Seattle. Excuse me. And I believe it'll be online as well. So I'll be talking about my book there, and a bunch of awesome people will be there.
When you say it's online, will it be live streamed or just recorded and posted later?
I think both. So they did a great job of it last year, and they got a killer tech team that's all over this. So yeah, I hope they'll do both again.
Wow. Is that a pretty large effort to plan and coordinate each year?
Yeah. I mean, I've stepped back a little bit since the old days, but there's a big team of volunteers. I couldn't even list them all out, but yeah, it is a massive effort, and the community comes together. There's no money involved. I mean, they have a shoestring budget, and they rely on sponsors, and it goes really well. They get hundreds every year.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's really cool. Well, thanks again for being on. Again, I'm Ethan. If you want to find more of my content, you can connect with me on my website, selfhost, selfh.st. Otherwise, have a great weekend and happy self-hosting.
Thanks, Ethan.